All right. Welcome to Thirsty Thursday, another installment. And folks, we are entering the fall season. Go ahead, take a moment, look outside, see the leaves changing color, feel the slight temperature change on your nose, perhaps. Listen to the school children walking down the sidewalk, or I'm recording at church today. They're right out here below me in the playground, both with tears of sadness and tears of joy as they play in that playground. Well, on this Thirsty Thursday, I want to dive in for us, going a little bit deeper into God's word of life and love through this theme of cultivating gratitude and joy and letting go of scarcity. And who among us does not need to enter into that story, where we cultivate more gratitude and joy in our life? And the gospel text that comes alongside this is Luke 17, 5 to 10. And here are the words of that text. The apostles said to the Lord, "Increase our faith." The Lord replied, "If you had faith the size of a mustard seed, you could say to this mulberry tree, 'Be uprooted and planted in the sea,' and it would obey you. Who among you would say to your slave who's just come in from plowing or tending sheep in the field, 'Come here at once and take your place at the table'? Would you not rather say to him, 'Prepare supper, put on your apron and serve while I eat and drink, and later you may eat and drink'? Do you thank the slave for doing what was commanded? So you also, when you have done all that you were ordered to do, say, 'We are worthless slaves. We have done only what we ought to have done.'" And this is the gospel of the Lord. Well, folks, a challenging text, especially around that language of slave or servant. Language that we're accustomed to in scripture, that people are serving, people have their different places and parts at the table. And Jesus is pointing to this story that we ought to do what we've been commanded to do. And we don't need to search out the accolades or have praise heaped upon us. There is a way that we are called to live. And I think Jesus is pointing to this aspect that all of us are created to be servants. Servants of the gospel. Servants of the Lord. Servants of the good that can be accomplished in this world when we, quote, lay down life for one another. And we've seen this time and time again. Where are the stories where gratitude and joy spring forth? And I can tell you, over and over I hear gratitude and joy being increased when somebody showed up to serve at a food bank, or someone helped find another person a home after a devastating circumstance, where somebody bought a cup of coffee for somebody, and it wasn't just in the transaction of buying a cup of coffee, but it was sitting down and looking each other in the eye and sharing in human story together, where there was a deeper connection. Where friends maybe have called a friend in a place of deep grief or depression or anxiety and said, "Let's go for a walk. Let's experience some time together. Let's listen more deeply." When people have shown up for one another in recovery efforts. Here at Grace, when we have worked hard for the good and faithful work of World Hunger, now in our history giving over $4 million to the work of World Hunger and disaster relief. Like missionaries often so say to relief agencies, the ones who stayed when everybody else disappeared, the ones who kept showing up, the ones who work toward sustainability, those were the people of great hope. And that's where life was most experienced. We simply have done what we ought to have done, to lock arms, to grab a hand, and to walk together throughout life, to cultivate gratitude and joy, and to let go of that sense of scarcity that often plagues this world. We know that also to be true when we hear people saying, I'm not enough. I will never have enough. I will never be enough. I'm unlovable. I'm not creative. I'm not of the divine. And it takes God's story and our story together to say, no, you are lovable. You have the divine within you and you are creative. We need to reclaim the truth that we are enough. And we as a people of God are enough because God has said so. God has poured out life into each of us. Well, as you know, in this theme, we've been looking here at the Rising Strong resource by Brené Brown. And I think looking into her chapter where she talks about some of the rumbling that needs to happen in life where we engage deeper in story, that this points to proactive ways to let go of that sense of scarcity that's often woven into the heart of things so that gratitude and joy can be springing forth. There's a quote by Margaret Atwood in Alias Grace. I'm going to read that quote to you. She says, when you are in the middle of a story, it isn't a story at all, but only a confusion, a dark roaring, a blindness, a wreckage of shattered glass and splintered wood, like a house in a whirlwind or else a boat crushed by the icebergs or swept over the rapids, and all aboard powerless to stop it. It's only afterwards that it becomes anything like a story at all, when you're telling it to yourself or to someone at all. Think about the lies or the half-truths that we might declare as we are in the middle of a story. That's normal. We haven't seen everything yet. We haven't heard everything. We haven't experienced everything. And then those half-truths, though, told over and over and over again, they start becoming the full truth. And there's grief and sadness in that, church. There's grief and sadness because it's not the whole truth. We want the whole truth. We want the whole story. We need to keep going in the discovery of what that story might really mean when the chapters are finally all written. Brené says it best. She said, the most dangerous stories we make up are the narratives that diminish our worthiness. And one of those dangerous stories about our worthiness is often truncated into saying we're not enough. I'm not going to ever have enough. I can't make a difference. And you're right. If those are the half-truths that we tell ourselves over and over and over again, no wonder that scarcity has a hold on us. No wonder that our world struggles in finding true gratitude and joy. But if we sit into that, we have to also scratch our head and say, why? Why is it that when we travel out there in the world or we experience some of the most vulnerable places on the planet where resources are so sparse, why is it that those folks continually have their eyes toward the heavens? Why is it that they spill out with so much joy? I think it's because they've learned time and time again that we are better together and that people with open hands and open hearts are the source of joy. It's not about having more or filling up the closets or discovering ways to continue to garner more for self, but true life and true love is grown when we pour life out, when we see God in the other, and when we share what we have. I had a great mentor in my life, was able to work with him and his wonderful wife for many years. And the one thing that touched me deeply as a beginning pastor, as I was working with him, is that they were always the first people to give. These folks didn't have a ton. They weren't overflowing with an abundance of resources. They had resources, yes. They had figured out how to maximize those resources, but the first thing that they wanted to do was to lead with a yes, to say that I can do something and I can make a difference. They never asked anybody to give or to participate in something that they weren't themselves willing to give to or to participate in. They were often the first ones to show up in terms of letting go of that mindset of scarcity so that they could cultivate gratitude and joy in their life and the lives of those around them. And as a new pastor, trying to figure out how do I manage the resources that I've been given? How do I understand the story of enoughness? And he and she came alongside me and showed me how to more fully do that. And so as a beginning pastor, when those requests came or when I would go and make a request of others, it taught me to lead first by doing the same. Do not ask somebody to do something that you're not willing to do, or don't invest in something that ask people to invest in something that you're not willing to invest in. Because what you end up experiencing is you lead with that. You're overwhelmed by the joy of others giving into it. I think your cup moves to a point of overflowing to say, look what God's people are doing. Look what God has done with these people and in this situation. It's really a powerful thing to behold. I may have shared this story in another podcast. I can't remember. There's so many stories, right? But when we were getting our work going in Haiti through the Haitian Tamoun Foundation, and we were starting these summer camps for kids, the first several years were very busy and active, but they were also really tough. Because everybody coming to that camp assumed that there would be a shortage of resources. That when we said everybody will receive a lunch, that the belief of the kids, though, in their worldview, because they rarely had enough for their family, they didn't believe that. And so everybody was pushing and pulling as though there was this mob to receive lunch. But year 3 and 4 and 5, it improved again and again and again. We were moving from a refugee camp experience to more a community or a family experience where people understood these people are coming through. They're showing up time and time again. And they're not leading with a sense of scarcity. They're making sure that the resource will be there for everyone. And by doing that over and over and over, these kids began to see that there was gratitude and joy spilling out. There was an abundance of resource, not leading with scarcity, but leading with plenty. And I tell you what, for me as a pastor, again, being brought to tears so many times as a kid would begin to eat their lunch, but would often stop halfway through and ask if they could have a small bag to put it in so that they could take the rest home to share with their family. So actually, I began to ask who was teaching who. Was I teaching them or were they teaching me? No, they didn't need all that was on the plate just for self. They were thinking of their family. They too weren't leading with a sense of scarcity that this meal was not enough, but know that it could be multiplied a couple more times and shared with others. The power of story, dear church. And so a few questions that Brené would ask of us as we rumble with scarcity and generosity, cultures of gratitude and joy versus cultures that limit potential and possibility. What more do I need to learn and understand about the situations that I'm in, about my world? What more do I need to learn and understand about the other people in the story in which I'm living? And what more do I need to learn and understand about myself and how I'm being grown and the story that I will tell as I live through it? Another author wrote, because we are compelled to make stories, we are often compelled to take incomplete stories and run with them. because there's this reward in our brain. We're wanting to figure things out. We're wanting to move to the last chapter. We want to have everything nailed down. But actually, when we look at our gospel stories and the stories that Jesus was telling and the stories that we're writing or experiencing in our world, those stories are moving us to mystery and to question and to going deeper. So we want to pause and say, as we read a story, why is this my first story? What's the second story, the third story, the fourth story? What's the developing story here? Because sadly, I'm not enough is one of the go-to narratives that we'll lead with. And the good news is today, we don't need to lead with that as our primary story. There's always more, especially when God is the one writing the chapters with us. And so today, pausing to think about storytelling of our lives, storytelling of our community, storytelling of our church, maybe even looking into our history and our own stories from the past. Another story to share with you. This last weekend, I decided to go through a bin of some old photos and papers from my childhood. And I gave some of those things to my children. They can use for their science experiments or whatever all else. I don't need them anymore. But one of the booklets I picked up was part of the Johnson family story. Their immigration story of coming from Denmark to the United States of America. And then making their way across, settling in Michigan for a period of time. I did not know that. I had not paid attention to that. And then moving from Michigan to South Dakota, where they were given 160 acres of land in which to develop. One of the places was out by Chamberlain, in a very small town that often experienced much drought. And it told this story of Bemi and Bestefor, as they lived in this very small house that had been built. And there was no insulation of any kind. Snow would fall through the cracks in the roof or the siding. They'd lay down with all of their clothes on and blankets over them, waking up in the morning to having to dust the snow off of one another. They told stories in that booklet of planting potatoes, but having no food left and having to go dig up those potatoes to eat the roots of that to survive another day. Eventually moving from Chamberlain over to a place called Viborg, which is a town that was developed from a whole Danish immigrant group from Viborg, Denmark. And there, in that place in which they lived, more stories of beginning, from dugout homes to then building a house eventually to now being the homestead out of which my dad still lives today. It's a story of coming through with barely anything, trying to find a sense of sustainability and then finding a place of enough, that word enough. But you know what I read in each page? Every generation essentially told the same story through tragedy and success. There was always just enough to get by. And that enoughness that they felt, there wasn't complaint or lament or we're failing, we're not going to make it. There was always this story of gratitude and joy for what they had, for where they were, and for all that could come next. For the 8 children who were born in that dugout home, and how they went on to live their lives and to discover more of God's story. Just doing what they ought, caring for one another, caring for their community, and caring for their world. And as they did that, they dared greatly to cultivate gratitude and joy in each other. And today I'd say I'm a product of that. I stand on their shoulders, just like you stand on the shoulders of all who've gone before you. And so today, a little more encouragement to dive into your generosity story, to dive into maybe some half-truths and move toward more full truth, to let go of scarcity, to cultivate gratitude and joy. And as you do that, may you experience great amounts of faith and hope and love. Go ahead, take out that notebook, take out a journal, dig into your archives, grab a cup of coffee, turn on the music, and pray through that. And reclaim some good and faithful truths of God's love for you, of you being a child of God, and being very creative in how you can live life and build life and share life with others. Know that you are loved. And stay thirsty. Always stay thirsty for more of God and more of God's grace. Because that right there is full and abundant life. All right, stay thirsty, my friends.